This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. New South Wales, Jeremy Zakas reporting. Leave immediately. That is the warning to one of several towns in Victoria, that southern Australian continent. Leave immediately. This particular town was being told to get out because of a three-day bushfire that continues to grow several days later. Ballarat, Victoria. Jeremy, a very good evening to you. The striking fact is, this is the wildfire we expected in your summer. Now that summer is ebbing and fall is imminent, you're getting summer weather. The wildfires in Victoria, is this unusual for summertime? Are these bigger than expected? And Victoria was not where I was looking for wildfires. It was Queensland, I believe. Good evening to you, Jeremy.
G'day, John. Yes, this is completely and utterly surprising right now. This is too late in the season for typically catastrophic fires and also too far south. Victoria is our southeastern state. And normally about this time of year, as we're going into autumn slash fall, as you call it there, it's starting to become very mild. The conditions are nice and the temperatures are lower. You're starting to get a bit of rain and everything's starting to cool off. But what's actually happened in the past week is that everything has actually got hotter. And not only hotter, it's also got a lot windier as well. So as you can imagine, heat plus wind equals catastrophic conditions equal bushfires. And so what we're now seeing in Victoria is very, very unusual for this time of year. It's in fact probably about 2 months too late to what we expected it to be, because last November, at the end of November, we were expecting to see exactly this, catastrophic fires of these proportions. But Victoria is now getting it now. The worst part is, John, that because we have had that rain, we have had a mild summer, there is a lot of undergrowth out there, which means the fires now are taking hold. They are uncontrollable. There's at least 500 separate fires being tracked at least. And the poor towns of Ballarat, Amherst, and a lot of the central parts of Victoria, they are absolutely doing it hard. They're having to fight the fires. People are having to make the choice, evacuate or stay. But the unfortunate thing is that a lot of people who are evacuating their homes in some of these areas, the places they are evacuating to are also on fire right now, John. So it is the catastrophic fires we expected to see back in November. Now it's too late, and it's really going to be a lot worse just because there is a lot more brush to burn.
Are these big towns, Byandine, Shire, Elmhurst, Mount Lanark, Ballarat, are those large towns?
They are large-ish. Ballarat itself is around about 100,000 population. The other ones 10 to 30 to maybe 40,000. So they are rural communities. So not the big city is not in, say, the millions of population. But the reality is there's around about at least 500,000 people directly in the firing line for a lot of these fires. And, John, you can imagine with rural roads not being as big as, say, our suburban highways and freeways that we have around the cities, imagine 500,000 people possibly needing to move location fairly quickly. It is a catastrophic condition. And not to say that that's going to happen, but people are not where they normally would be. So, of course, the rural communities are starting to feel the strain on the edge of these fires too, as people needing assistance are coming out to them. So it's really, in addition to where the fires are themselves, the communities around there are really feeling it as well.
Jeremy's been teaching me about wildfires, and I also spoke with the South Australian biologist Daniel Claude, who wrote a book 10 years ago about wildfires. Wildfires don't change. They don't age. What happened in 2010, what happened in 1939, what happened in 1989, all these are the same incidents, because you have a choice as a resident of Ballandine or Lake Monarch. The choice is, as I've been taught, Jeremy, the choice is have a plan and stick to it. If you make the decision to go, go. If you make the decision to stay, stay. Don't change your mind. Why is that, Jeremy? What does it teach us?
Well, John, the reason that is there and why it's imperative to stick to your original plan is because if you change your mind, and for example, if you decide to stay and you suddenly decide to leave, chances are you're making the decision too late, which means that you're going to be leaving in a situation where, for one, you may not have any visibility on the road anymore, so you're actually driving into a fire front. And two, you're likely to be in a panic state, so you're likely to have less rational thoughts. So the fact that you've changed your mind in possibly a state of fear means you're not thinking very straight. And unfortunately, when people don't think straight, people do rash things. They may drive a little bit faster than they should. They may not recognize danger the way they should. And what's been found in a lot of studies is a lot of people who have died, especially in Victoria during our Black summer fires back in 2019, was those people died because they decided to leave too late. So they all took to the road at the same time when visibility was undrivable. They all got into the firefront and they started colliding with each other because they were driving too fast, or they ran into trees, they ran off the road and then died in their cars. So they had left too late. But if they made the decision to stay in their homes, because of the way that homes are built these days, most of them will survive a firefront initially. You'll be able to survive the actual flames. You must also put the fires out straight afterwards because you'll have spot fires around your homes, but it's a sanctuary, it's a refuge, so they would have been okay. But because they made the decision late, they changed their mind, they died. But if you also decide to leave, you make the decision to leave early, which means you're actually out of the danger area well ahead of anything that could possibly happen. So normally, if you're unsure, what you're taught here and what you're actually told by the government is decide to leave. Lock up your home, make sure everything's secure, take your animals with you, but just leave. So if you leave, you can't make the wrong decision, but if you stay, it is imperative that you must stay.
What I learned from Danielle is when she had small children, two small children, and her husband was part of the volunteer force. A great deal of firefighting is done by the volunteers of the state where the fire is happening. Like the Victoria volunteers are now engaged, and the volunteers show up because they get a call or they hear on the radio, depending on what area you're in. Now they would get an alert on their cell phone. The fathers and mothers go, and the children are in the care of a caregiver or grandmother. Danielle said when that would happen, the plan was I go with the children, and we meet up with Bob. I don't remember her husband's first name later. We hear from him later. This is before iPhones. Now that the children are grown, the decision is to stay. Even if her husband is called away by the volunteers, she's going to stay and fight it because she's safer in her home. It's been prepared. She even talked about having a home that the fire, they're in a gully, a gulch, and the fire will go over them, will skip over top and not touch them. So everybody has a different approach to what the fire is going to do. I also learned that these are not fires that we're familiar with in the United States, where the hardwood burns or the softwood burns or they light up an elm tree. These are fires in a eucalyptus tree. What does that mean, Jeremy? How does it change?
The difference, John, is really what's in the actual eucalyptus itself. And eucalyptus is actually a type of oil. And you can imagine oil burns. So what actually happens is eucalyptus trees, they're full of this really, really potent flammable oil. And it's actually stored inside the trunk. So what happens is as the fire comes upon the tree, basically it heats the outside, the bark and the outer layers of the wood. And then all of a sudden, what will happen is there'll either be some kind of breach where the eucalyptus oil starts to come out of the tree rapidly, or just the pure heat causes kind of a flash point to be reached. And these trees, John, if you've ever seen them, and I guess in some ways been unfortunate to see them through bushfires I've lived through, they do go up like a Roman candle. They kind of explode and continue to burn, almost like an oil fire you'll see, say, in any oil field spill on the ocean. So they're incredibly flammable, and they just burn so hot. And the worst part is too, a lot of the older ones have a lot of eucalyptus oil in them. So where you get hardwood and softwood fires around other parts of the world, that they burn for a few hours, then they burn out. When there's eucalyptus oil involved, what can happen is the fires will burn for a lot longer, but the trees themselves will look like they're extinguished, but there will be hot spots where it's actually still burning in the trunk. So what you tend to learn from the fireys here, the Rural Fire Service here in New South Wales, the Country Fire Service in Adelaide, in South Australia, for example, is that they will stay on a fire ground for days afterwards, just primarily look for hot spots, but also to watch the eucalyptus trees themselves, because that oil, John, that can spark off again even days later. So they're incredibly dangerous. I mean, they're beautiful trees, but incredibly dangerous.
The tragedy also is we know that these eucalyptus forests that are burning are the homes of the koalas. The koalas are marsupials. They're not bears. They're marsupials. All the marsupials, except for one species of possum, is in Australia, all of them. And the koalas eat eucalyptus leaves. They've learned after 27 or 36 million years. Yes, that's right. They've been there that long. We're like colonials in a time machine that they've conquered a long time ago. They've learned to eat eucalyptus in the last who knows how many hundreds of thousands of years. They stay with their tree. It's their source of food. They stay there until the tree's on fire, and they still are reluctant to leave. However, Australia, aware of this vulnerability of their koalas, this is hard to believe, but there it is. Their koala hospitals. Jeremy, did you ever visit a koala hospital?
I have been lucky enough to visit one, actually, in Adelaide when I was visiting relatives and parents just a little while ago up in Cleveland. It's in the Adelaide Hills, and it's amazing. It is actually a hospital dedicated to koalas. And as you said there, John, they live in the eucalyptus trees, and the poor little things do get burnt during fires. But luckily enough, these hospitals are very, very well kitted out. It's almost like a burns unit in any major human hospital. So the koalas, if they do get there in time, they have a great chance of surviving. And honestly, they have a pretty good survival rate if they can get there. So you know what? If you get a chance to, if anyone does get a chance to visit a koala hospital, I thoroughly recommend it.
Yes, koalas. I mean, this is the one recognizable animal on Earth that everybody would say immediately Australia. So the wildfires are burning in Victoria, but this doesn't suggest that things are going to get better. Western Australia, Queensland, that's where I expect them. Are they having heat now, Jeremy?
John, this is the weird part. No, the short answer is no. In fact, Western Australia and Queensland, they are still getting warmer weather, but it's not the 110 Fahrenheit, so the 40 degrees Celsius type of temperatures. And the interesting part is that they are also both starting to get big rain bands in and kind of very monsoonal type of weather, which means that while there might be a little bit of heat there, they're actually not getting the dry conditions that's going to start to cause any sort of fire or catastrophic conditions. So this is completely topsy-turvy, and this is where I think things are going a bit strange, in that where we thought right now, I'd be saying that, you know, Western Australia is hot, we're getting catastrophic fire conditions. Queensland's hot, we're getting catastrophic fire conditions now. We're actually getting exactly the opposite. It's Victoria we're talking about today, and that is in itself very, very strange.
So part of the continent is having summer weather now when you're ready for fall. Part of the continent is having what, spring weather, rain in Western Australia? When does that happen? Wintertime?
I'd almost argue, John, it's actually edging on. Maybe the very end of autumn, the very start of winter. The temperatures are still kind of warm enough to say autumn, but it is very odd. It's sort of a very strange mix of conditions. And there is apparently another cyclone, I believe, forming off of Western Australia too, which is kind of like a summer event, but the temperatures say it's kind of edging towards a winter event. So honestly, John, I mean, I know we live down under, but literally everything is all upside down as far as the weather's going right now. So it's a very, very strange set of circumstances.
Jeremy, there's some photographs accompanying the stories about the wildfires burning in Victoria. What is the color of a wildfire at night? Is it red? Is it purple? Is it many different colors? You've seen it.
It's certainly many different colours. And what you typically see, especially if it's been burning for a while, is a very dark orange. It's almost like a dark red to a dark orange. And that's because there's a lot of smoke and haze. And typically when it's burning at night and it has been for a while, it creates an inversion layer. So almost a layer of basically dirty cloud that keeps the heat in and creates a haze. And you get this real orange glow. But for the very fresh fires, I guess you could say the very new ones, the ones that are moving incredibly fast, they tend to be a lot closer to yellow, very bright, sort of almost white colours. And they just tend to sort of like, they look like, I guess you could say, any given sort of fierce, ferocious type of fire. But interestingly enough, the purples do come out a little bit too. And that, I think, is attributed more to the shrub that it's actually burning. And that will tend to be, a fire that's been burning for a while and not moving so fast. But you do get this cacophony of colours, I guess you could say. But honestly, John, the ones that we used to really watch out for were the ones that they start off orange and then you start to see it turn a lot whiter and a lot sort of brighter and a lot yellower, because that meant the intensity was starting to increase, which actually meant there was probably wind behind it, because that's typically what starts to make a fire more intense. So as soon as we saw that happening, we watched very, very closely which way it was going. So it's at nighttime, it is spectacular, but it's also quite terrifying at the same time.
One more twist. The Australian severe weather season extends to April of this year. However, this is an El Nino year, meaning that we're supposed to get weather that's disruptive, especially here in North America. However, they're now suggesting that La Nina is coming back in 2024. La Nina means rain, lots of rain, wet conditions that would hit Western Australia, New South Wales, back to the bucketing that we had, 2 years ago, Jeremy? I lose count because you're right side up, I'm upside down, so I can't tell time very easily. But in any event, La Nina returning means that all that rain would lead to flooding and more snakes. So there's something disturbing about the weather, or are we paying too much attention? Do you remember this much excitement about weather when you were growing up in South Australia?
Well, actually, John, I do in a funny, different sort of a way. The excitement was more about long-term drought. I remember living through a 10-year drought when I was in South Australia through the early thousands, late 90s, through to about 2008, 2009. And it was exciting, but not to this degree. And I don't think it's because we're watching it closely. I think it's actually naturally strange because the fact that we're about to go into another La Nina event, I could almost argue that we never stopped having a La Nina event because of the amount of rain we've actually had in the last couple of months. So everything that we thought we knew about the weather, especially this year, about how we thought we could forecast it. And when I say they, especially the Bureau of Meteorology, which does a fantastic job here in Australia, but it's showing that Mother Nature is really, really unpredictable now and probably more unpredictable than ever before. And I think, John, the reality is you look back at the records and you look back at the cycles here in Australia of weather conditions for the last 100 years, which we do have records for. This is unusual. The number of weather events, that especially the flooding and the hot weather cycles, is unusual. And I think we're seeing it certainly in our wildlife. As you mentioned, the snakes there, the snake population genuinely has boomed. And I don't think that would have happened if the weather was normal, because we have never, never had as much excitement about talking about snakes before as we have at this time. So this is truly something unique.
And you're cutting the grass once a week or more than once a week?
Honestly, I could do it more than once a week. And I'm just recharging my mower right now. I didn't even get through the entire lawn this time because it was so tall. So honestly, and when I say grass, is actually growing to around 4 to 5 inches in less than a week. And that is, you can get it in some areas of Queensland, but I mean, here in New South Wales, I've never seen this before. This, I mean, it's annoying, but this is truly something remarkable.
Jeremy Zakas in New South Wales. This is the Friends of History Debating Society watching the continent of Australia with unusual weather patterns. Does that mean the continent of North America is going to match it? Unknown. I'm John Batchelor.